horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back and got about 25 minutes to spend with Sid Fernando, Sire Watch. Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. Sid, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Steve, you know, before we proceed, I happened to listen to your show this morning and I heard the Alan Foreman segment too.
Sure.
Yeah, this is one issue that I have to address because nobody seems to be clear on this in regards to HISA and potential constitutional claims. Let me address this really quickly before we move on. You know, part of what the constitutional claim is going, or whether the law, which is what it is now, is potentially unconstitutional, will hinge upon once a state or multiple states join this HBPA lawsuit, either on their own or in amicus briefs, which are friends of amicus, meaning just joining onto it as a friendly brief. But it's going to hinge on when the states join in, if and when the states join in, because the HBPA lawsuit is very narrow, but it takes on added impact when states join in. And I'll tell you, I mentioned this last week, but it's very, very clear. In the 2018 suit, Murphy versus NCAA, the idea to get rid of PASPA had been going on for decades, close to a decade, 10 years, from the time Bill Bradley was governor of Jersey until Murphy was governor of Jersey. So, you know, that's why it's Murphy versus NCAA. But it finally did get to the Supreme Court, and the law was overturned. And again, the major part of that law was the point that led to overturning. It was the point I mentioned when we last spoke about it, which is called the anti-commandeering principle of the 10th Amendment, which is that the anti-commandeering principle prevents Congress from shifting the cost of regulation to states. So what HISA does is, in its funding mechanism, it asked, and it changed this, by the way, after I had written about this in 2019, they went back and changed it based on what I had written to make it voluntary. But it still doesn't change that principle, because an adjunct to the anti-commandeering principle preventing Congress from shifting the cost of regulation to the states is also the accountability for the regulations. If a state goes ahead and voluntarily decides to fund it, but has no accountability, well, then that comes into the crosshairs, too, because a state then is voluntarily funding a regulatory agency in which it plays no role, right? And part of the language of Murphy was that the anti-commandeering rule promotes political accountability. When Congress itself regulates, the responsibility for the benefits and burdens of the regulation is apparent. But if the states are funding this and they have no accountability for it, again, it falls into a constitutional issue. So I just have to bring that up, because none of these guys apparently understand con law and are aware of any of this, including, you know, all these guys commenting on Twitter, a lot of intelligent people. They simply haven't read Murphy versus NCAA, and they simply have no grasp of constitutional issues. Whether it gets reversed or not is a different issue, but there's a valid ground for a constitutional challenge.
Well, and that's you're right that that part of it, it doesn't seem to be, you know, the simple, you know, legal mechanism aspect. It seems that those critiquing the horsemen are taking an avenue that you know, is addressing their interests, their narrow-minded interests, as opposed to the larger simple legal constitutionality. That's a point well taken, Sid.
Yeah, no, and I had to mention it because even Alan didn't get it. The NTRA, when they came out and tried to address it in some kind of brief 2 weeks ago, some kind of press release, they said, oh, it's very constitutional. It's like FINRA SEC. FINRA is an organization for regulating the SEC. FINRA, however, is not based on state funding, and it's based on individuals and companies funding it itself. The HISA has two funding mechanisms, either the states voluntarily funded or HISA taxes people individually, which is the FINRA part, comparable. If you tax them individuals, you can do this, but HISA is hoping to get the states to voluntarily fund it, and so there's a big difference. All these guys using, you know, smoke screens to, as you point out, advance their narrow parts of it. And, you know, I just happen to have an interest in constitutional law. And, you know, I see this kind of BS out there, bro. It's, you know what I'm saying? It's total BS, these guys.
I know that gets under you. That, that'll set you off every time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Don't gaslight me. You know, I happen to know this stuff.
That'll. I appreciate it. I understand people are going to line up in various camps, but my request all along has been just to appreciate the concerns that all parties have, regarding whether this is the right and proper mechanism for addressing the things around the sport that require addressing. So I'm willing. I've said a few times, if this goes forward, I hope it is as close to a panacea as possible. I continue to have my doubts. So that's just my posture. Sid, couple of things. Let's dive in. We got exactly 18 minutes, so we've got to be sharp and adroit. Known agenda. Here is the sixth Florida Derby winner for Todd Pletcher, and a horse that really admirable the way he kind of re-engineered, took a read from this Curlin Sun and, got him refocused, and it pays off. And it seems like he's really a danger going forward.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, first off, when you talk about Curlin, this is a stallion that from the very first crop of three-year-olds, he seems to have, he got a first crop classic winner, and he gets classic winners, classic horses, and another classic winner, an Exaggerator, actually, too. So he had Palace Malice, Belmont Stakes winners in his first crop, and then Exaggerator, a Preakness winner. He also gets and was having, he was on this incredible streak of having had a classic winner from every single crop until I think a year or two maybe ago. But he's back on the trail now with this colt. The way he ran, I heard your comments earlier. I mean, it was like a very typical Todd Pletcher type of peaking, And you got to like his his chances, I think, just from the pedigree. He's out of a grade one winning dam, a European bred dam. And, you know, the family's not particularly strong. There's plenty of stamina in it and speed. The second dam is by Darshan, who's a, you know, a source of extreme stamina these days. So, you know, he's got this colt, got the pedigree. He won the race nicely. That race is a real, you know, good indicator of, you know, class. Yeah, that race requires a lot of speed and stamina for that 9 furlongs. In other words, you know, you can't just plod your way to it. It's a speed favoring track, and you've got to be able to, you know, have that speed and the stamina. As you saw the way he ran down that horse, who had the speed, the runner up, right, and the horse with too much stamina. Perhaps wasn't able to get the job done. That's greatest honor. But this colt was that middle ground between the runner-up and the third-place horse, speed and stamina. And I think I really like this horse. And in fact, I'm thinking about calling Todd Pletcher, talk more about him, and perhaps write a column on him because I was quite impressed.
There was really a lot of things that I was anxious to talk about yesterday with Todd, and most notably, I mean, first and foremost, that I didn't think that the Tampa run race was as bad as people wanted to make out, and
right.
It's such a funny place, you know. Horses, the footing, took a portion of the race to, you know, to get used to it. I can't remember if it was the horse of Satish's, that whether Todd trained him or whether it was the one Tom Albertrani had that ran a very similar race at Tampa. And it immediately reminded, I want to say Odysseus. And I've seen this before over there. And, you know, then when he had that terrific allowance win and the blinkers, and it just, it seems like this was a real demonstration of, you know, of Todd's horseman, you know, his horseman chops, the way he's handled this horse.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, don't forget, he came into this race off that big 11-length win, you know, after Tampa. And you just get the feel of this horse is, you know, just coming into this race just right. And just when, you know, people were kind of writing off Todd with the classic horses here, right? This horse shows up and, yeah, you got to really like him. He's got a lot of experience behind him, you know. He's got that feel to him. You know, he's had 6 starts. He's had, you know, 3 starts this year, 2 wins, and got the right sire, the right trainer. You just gotta like the horse. You know, a lot of these homebreds too. This horse obviously a homebred for Vinny Viola, but he did go through the ring. He was $135,000 RNA. Phasic Tip in Saratoga. So, you know, this horse just shows you that he's, you know, physically been developing since that time.
Well, that's a, you know, that's a format. The one that came home, that's the old Bob LaPenta, Nick Zito angle. The ones that don't sell, end up coming back and becoming, you know, major successes. It's kind of funny that portion of the equation. I love it.
Yeah. It's a similar portion, by the way, with the horse you noted in the, Bluegrass, Highly Motivated. He was actually listed as a sale for Clara Rich, a homebred, but he was actually, you know, obviously bought back. He was listed as a sale for $240,000, and he was brought back. Sort of just like American Pharaoh had been listed as a sale for $300,000 and was brought back. So you can, include those horses as well, because they were homebreds. They were brought back by the owners. And, you got to like highly motivated chances in the bluegrass.
Well, and we'll quickly touch on the weekend. Of course, both the Wood and Santa Anita Derby drawn today, but bluegrass is set. And a quick glance at Bairama as well. The dam she had a tappet that started once. That's all we know. There was a Leams map, a victory map, who's unraced as a 4-year-old. And there's a Bodemeister yearling, a filly. And there's an Always Dreaming. The Bodemeister is a 2-year-old, and the Always Dreaming is a yearling filly. So he had she had 3 straight colts, and now she's had 2 fillies in a row. Bairama coming in behind. So Known Agenda goes forward, and we should mention Soup and Sandwich briefly too. Mrs. Weber's homebred, and this one another Into Mischief out of the Tappet mare that was Charlotte's as well.
Excellent run, right?
Yeah.
He was, took it. His speed held up in that race. You know, yet another Into Mischief we've been talking about that gets, a mile and an eighth. We'll see, like the horse I just mentioned, highly motivated by Into Mischief, too. He'll get that chance at a mile and an eighth in the bluegrass.
Tappet mare, and trying to find out what else there was to know about this colt, but we'll save it. And let's slip in, Sid. I should, before we move away from Gulfstream, though, I should mention, how about Liam's Map churning out 3 stake winners on the day?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. 2 new graded stakes winners. One of them was for, one of our clients, Bob Lothenbach, Churn and Burn. That horse is, an Enix C-plus Nick, but we'd had him as the best of sale on our list for Phasing Tip in Saratoga. And Bob, he only likes to look at our best of sale, so... his team must have liked that colt too, because they bought him, and I'm really happy for him. Liam's Map, his successes are detailed today. If you go to the Twitter account at Sirewatch, which is our company, Sirewatch account, Enix Workover Consultants account, our bloodstock editor, Francis Karen, has written a great piece today on Liam's Map's success, and if you're interested, I recommend reading that piece. We've tweeted it from that account, so it's out there.
I'll retweet that for everybody so they can can find that. Absolutely. Let's glance. Palace Malice's name came up earlier, and Palace Malice got himself a prep winner with Like the King, and out of a Corinthian mare, Horseshoe Racing, bred Like the King. And the synthetic path is, everybody references Animal Kingdom, but there might only, historically, we may end up, there might only end up ever being one Animal Kingdom. We'll see. But some thoughts about this page.
Like the King, he's trained by Wesley Ward. I think it's his first Derby starter, if he goes. Palace Malice, the horse I referenced, was the first crop Belmont Stakes winner for Curlin. Went to stud, and he had that grade one winner, 2-year-old Structor from his first crop. And you like to see a subsequent big winner from other crops coming up. He's gone a little quiet, but, hopefully this horse brings him back into play. Palace Malice stands at 3 chimneys. And the pedigree, Stakes Mare, Like a Queen, is she was take place at Gulfstream Park, and she's by Corinthian, who was really a terrible sire, son of Pulpit, who just could not get out of his own way. However, the second dam is by Unbridled, and you know, it's not a great family again. However, it's not a terrific pedigree, but this horse won nicely. As you point out, let's see if he can make that switch and move forward. Seems pretty ambitious, but you know, Wesley Ward's a very good trainer, known more for obviously his two-year-olds and his turf horses. But he's been, you know, he's told me before he's been looking for, you know, a horse to go on dirt long, and maybe this horse works out for him.
You know, I got to mention you mentioned that second dam, and it's kind of funny. There's a stallion or a classic horse that's in this pedigree that you never see. Forget Corinthian. What about Bet Twice showing up in this pedigree?
That's right. The sire of the third dam was the stakes winner by Bet Twice, Twin Bet.
I never see Bet Twice in a pedigree.
Yeah, you know, when you look at the female family, Steve, one of the reasons you don't see Bet Twice in a pedigree is because he wasn't successful.
Yeah.
You know, one of the reasons you don't see Corinthian much in a pedigree is he wasn't successful. So when you look at the first three dams in this pedigree, two of them are by two really bad sires, Corinthian and Bet Twice. Yet, this horse has overcome that, you know? Got to give some props here to Female Family. Got to give some props here to Palace Mouth. Connections.
The broodmare sires in the, on the tail female line is crazy. King Dorset, Diplomat Way. I mean, it's a complete set of obscurities and oddities. It's very funny. And so the regal moniker is makes me kind of smile. You reach Like a Queen was the dam, and Palace Malice. It's perfect. You know, he's trying to make everybody forget what's going on behind that page. All right, we got about 3 minutes in, and because I've got a very short window for Tony Alivato next.
3 minutes is good for me too.
All right, well, let me get you to talk a minute about now I'm digging around for it. The winner in Dubai, and I haven't seen anything yet. I was going to reach out for Darren Rogers to see if there's much word yet from Godolphin, but the incredible sequence of 3-year-olds that they keep producing, Godolphin. Here's Rebel's Romance that wins and wins with authority. You know, I was kind of rooting for the New York bred for Sheikh Hamdan. This is a Dubawi gelding out of a Street Cry mare, a Godolphin homebred, you know, nice enough. But you know, I don't know if we're necessarily going to see him come Derby Day.
Who, Rebel's Romance?
Yeah.
Yeah, G2 winner. So what were we talking about? Him,
well,
or,
Dubawi. Yeah. I mean, you know, the son of Dubawi out of a Street Cry mare. Any, you know, just anything to know about this horse?
You know, obviously Dubawi is one of the best stallions in the world. He's their flagship. He's a Godolphin flagship horse. Stands in Europe. What we've seen from him. He was obviously a son of Dubai Millennium, who only had one crop, son of Seeking the Gold. They run on dirt. They run really well on dirt. And they're also outstanding on turf, obviously, because he's been successful in Europe. So So tying it all in, as we've mentioned before, with a minute left to go, Godolphin has been on an absolute tear. And, of course, they put their champion up this weekend in essential quality. But they are on an absolute tear. And, you know, they'll probably have multiple horses in the Derby.
You would think. I mean, Prevalence. Yeah. We also got Prevalence running in the Wood.
That's right.
It's an embarrassment embarrassment of riches. Proxy Mike Stidham told me on Monday that they're kind of backing off of they're not going to be aggressive with Proxy. So there's, you know, there's even another to talk about. And there was the one. There's also the one that won the European, the one of the UK. Let me, I've got him here somewhere. The one of the UK races.
Yeah, that's right.
Not Highland Avenue was theirs. Highland Avenue.
Yeah. Who's he by?
I'm not sure. I don't think I've got. I don't have any. I don't have any.
Oh,
that was from
Dubawi
the.
Too.
He's a Dubawi as well. How about that?
Yeah.
All right. Well, Sid, we'll see how many Godolphins show up. I will look forward to recapping the weekend next Wednesday.
You got it, bro. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Sid. Sid Fernando, everybody. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. And waiting in the wings, Tony Alivato from the New York Racing Association. Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. And, you know, Tony, I wanted to make sure to get to you and we'll get to Mike Mulvihill at some point soon to talk about this just landmark deal that was announced going into the weekend, a 9-year broadcast arrangement. But beyond that, Fox Sports buying into Naira Betts. I mean, this really feels like an important development and something very positive, not just for New York racing and for Naira, but for the whole industry.
Yeah, look, as someone who's worked in horse racing for over 3 decades, I love the sport, obviously. It's everything I have in my life I owe to horse racing. It's, you know, really important for me to see the sport succeed and grow, and it's been a wish of mine to see it reach as many new fans as possible. And I think that this deal is, you know, a step towards that, not to maybe overstate it, but there's never been any sport that's been hurt by being on television. And I don't think horse racing will end up being an exception to that rule. So, you know, to know that horse racing is now going to have 700 hours on live national television a year through 2030, that's a pretty big deal. And I think it can only help horse racing. So we're excited about it. It's really a credit to, you know, the team at Naira that works on the shows, whether it's, you know, people like Andy Sterling, was, you know, on camera, and Maggie and the rest of the team, or the people behind the scenes that put the shows together, the sponsors that supported us early on when this was just an idea. And, you know, without the backing, financial backing, you can never get something like this off the ground. And then, you know, I think just as important as Fox and the fact that they've showed this commitment to horse racing, which, let's be honest, it didn't exist 5-6 years ago. There wasn't really a lot of interest outside of our one network partner, NBC, who's been great, but there was no interest from anybody else in terms of televising horse racing on a national scale. So, you know, I think it's just really a great opportunity, and we're excited about it.
In addition to obviously to the, you know, the continuation of the presentation product, flesh out, Tony, what the what Fox's interest and potential for even a higher percentage of investment in Naira Betts, what this represents, because it seems to indicate part of a larger sports betting platform and, you know, unification of, you know, like-minded you know, wagering entities. What do you envision? Because I'm sure that, that there were expansive discussions about, you know, what this could all mean between Fox and NYRA.
Yeah, so, you know, in case listeners aren't that familiar with the deal, Fox now has will own 25% of NYRA bets beginning probably July 1st, once it clears regulatory hurdles, which should not be an issue. And they have the option to take that up to close to 50% ownership of NYRA bets. And the first 25% was something we put in the deal a few years ago. So we did the original show in 2016, which was 80 hours from Saratoga, Saratoga Live. And the show was well received, and we wanted to get locked in to a long-term commitment. Mike Mulvihill from Fox and our team, we worked closely on different ideas. And the idea was, look, we want Fox to have skin in the game. Because as we all know, that you know, the viewership for horse racing is not going to be anywhere near that of an NFL game. And so the advertising dollars are never going to be as high as some of these other sports. So unfortunately, in the past, horse racing has taken a backseat to a lot of sports just because of ad dollar revenue. By giving Fox some skin in the game and saying, you know, you have a piece of the betting action, it really incented them to give the shows as much distribution and as much marketing as possible. Now, fast forward to last year with the pandemic and the lack of sports that were on television, Fox was able to see what the power of television was for the NYRA Bets brand. And if you look at when we first started NYRA Bets, that first year, we handled $7.2 million in bets. Last year, we handled $225 million. That's over a four-year span of growth from $7 million to over $200 million. That never happens without television. NYRA, while a very strong brand, was somewhat of a regional brand, but because of the power of television, that was able to grow. So now, if you're Fox and you're looking at the current landscape of the U.S. and how sports betting has really gained so much traction and so much momentum, it's really just a question of time in each state before sports betting becomes legal. Why not partner with NYRA Bets, have the ability to be in 30 states taking wagers and using a television network and shows to promote that brand and promote the wagering? So for us, you know, NYRA is a not-for-profit. We're in this for the long term. It's about what's going to help us for the next 10 to 20 years. Why not give up a piece of the action in order to get that, what we're looking for? So you look at the Travers, and the Travers was on broadcast Fox. We saw unbelievable numbers from a wagering standpoint and also from, you know, driving account signups. Why not try to get more shows on Fox Broadcast? Why not try to get more shows on Fox Sports 1? Eventually do tie-ins. I'd love to see the day when there's a sports betting tie-in from the All-Star Game, which is 2 days before Saratoga opens, to opening day of Saratoga, some type of a prop bet or something. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to do different things and get creative, but it only happens because of Fox having skin in the game.
And that element to me was the most, really the most eye-popping. And the fact that this was actually dangled to them, that you had the foresight to dangle it to them in the initial contract, actually, that you saw this kind of, you know, on the horizon, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, at that time, Chris Kay was our CEO, Dave O'Rourke was our chief revenue officer. Of course, Dave is now the CEO. And they really bought into this idea. And, you know, we've been willing to take chances. We took a chance by letting Fox have Belmont Park and Saratoga races exclusively 2 years ago. That was something that, you know, there was obviously a risk associated with that. But we made that decision. And, and it's worked out okay. So, you know, but also, you know, I know you're going to have Mike Mulvihill on the show at some point, but Mike really has been, and he's an executive at Fox. He has really been a huge supporter of horse racing. And I don't think this ever happens if Mike Mulvihill is not at Fox. That's the guy who loves the sport. He's 100% behind it. And I think that now there's a lot more of that executive team at Fox that has bought into it and has seen the value that horse racing brings. And again, if the shows weren't good, which is a credit to the people who work on the shows, not me, the shows weren't good, we're not having this conversation either. To turn over 700 hours of your network to NYRA and let them produce the content, it doesn't happen unless they're happy with the production. So it's really, I think, just everything coming together. We did catch a little bit of a perfect storm with an unfortunate situation last year. But horse racing was there and able to provide, something for viewers and sports fans during a terrible time.
On that topic, I am curious. In conversation, and this is more of an inside baseball kind of a query. What was learned, Tony, over the course of this period, March to March now, as you were playing to empty grandstands, what was the learning both from your perspective and from Fox's?
I think that what we learned is that horse racing is not a dying sport. And I think sometimes those of us in the industry, we can be so down on ourselves because, let's be honest, horse racing has missed opportunities in the past, and we have made some mistakes and shot ourselves in the foot. But last year, when we saw what was going on with all the major league sports, the fact that horse racing was able to continue to race and operate during the pandemic is a real testament to people working at all the racetracks, not just the major tracks, not just NYRA. The fact that they were able to do that, I mean, at Santa Anita, had a bubble before the term bubble was even created. With the jockeys. So, horse racing really showed that, we are far from dead. And in fact, I think that we're going to see a real uptick in the sport. I think we're going to see a lot of new fans coming into the sport. And for those people out there who gamble and play the horses, to have some new blood in there, to say not blood is probably not the right word, to have a new audience engaged in playing the sport, is really a positive thing. So I think that's what we learned, is that there's an interest in horse racing. The signups that we saw, people opening up accounts, I think that's one thing that really impressed Fox, was to see the sheer volume of people that were opening up accounts, betting with really low introductory offers to wager. And then the fact that they stuck around and those people are still betting. People that signed up for a $20 free play in April still betting, the Florida Derby last weekend. So that's what's been really exciting.
And the retention has been there, in other words.
Yes, surprisingly. I mean, we expected, with some of the promotions we did, we expected about a 20% retention and actually saw 80%. So it was a flip of what we thought.
Well, that's stunning. that's outlandish, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's good, but it just tells you that the people who did come and watch the shows and played on played the horses and watched on, not just on Fox, but also on NBC, which did televise a lot of racing with their partnership with TV, that those people did stick around, and they're still betting. It'll be interesting to see how the numbers are, once we get into, April and May compared to last year. But so far what we've seen is, even when the other sports returned, while we didn't see the same amount of people signing up on a daily basis, those who had signed up for an account are still playing.
Well, that testimony to how much attention has been paid to make this all, happen, and the quality of the presentation goes a long way. There's more, the information that's offered, on the America's Day at the Races and the Saratoga Live shows. It's unique, actually. It's a unique combination of of valuable, better information. The more the over wrap, the umbrella kinds of features and behind the scenes and the horsemanship that you get from Maggie and Rich McLeori, et cetera. I mean,
Keith, one of the biggest compliments we got was from a Fox executive who said that if you look at what's being done on the shows in terms of giving out betting information, we are light years ahead of anything that's being done in sports betting. For example, we had a show where there was a horse that was coming off of a layoff, a maiden, and the horse had been gelded. And Maggie pointed out that she had notes on the horse from the last time the horse was in the paddock, and the horse was really acting up, and the horse didn't run well. Now the horse returns months later as a gelding, and the horse looks amazing. And the horse is 7-8-1, and the horse wins by 3 lengths. That's information that you cannot get anywhere if you're not other than watching the show. Compare that to a pregame show for the NFL where they're telling you that, it's 28 degrees and windy and everybody's running to their computer to bet the under. They have some kind of an edge, and they don't. Like that, anything we're hearing on SportsCenter or we're seeing in a pregame show, Vegas and the lines makers have long about it. There's zero edge there. But you can get an absolute edge by listening to the people on the shows, even if you're not necessarily the picks. It's about the information that's being given out and being able to come to your own conclusions. And I think that that's something that 10 years from now, you'll be watching some of these sports betting shows that will exist, and they will have modeled a lot of what they're doing off of what you're seeing now in horse racing.
Well, and you can understand why, because what we have to deal with as horse players in particular is just a constant changing landscape within the course of an afternoon at really any racetrack, and it's certainly not limited to Aqueduct, Belmont, and Saratoga. The conditions change, the actual speed can change, the flow of a racetrack changes. It's just incredible the dynamics that are there, and when you've got somebody, well, Andy, is the linchpin to everything, given, 40 years of serious horseplay. And, Andy takes his share of abuse, but, there's just nobody like him, in terms of seizing a moment and understanding, what's happening, on the racetrack in a given race and with a wider view of things. It's unique. The personalities work. It all comes together beautifully, and to be rewarded like this, really speaks to what's been achieved over these last 5 years.
I think our talent's really done a great job of simplifying the sport without alienating those of us who are
exactly
lifelong fans. And that's a really difficult thing to do. And, you see people like Jonathan Kinchin, who, is very new to being on television. It's only been 2 years that he's been on the air. Tom Amos, who's a trainer who's been in horse racing his whole life. You hear them talk in terms of general sports and make analogies to help people relate. And I think that's something that's really helped the show. We always said the three things we try to do on the shows is, educate, entertain, and inform. Like, those are the three things that we're always trying to accomplish on every show. And if we're able to do that, then we've had a successful show. Again, I can't, thank Fox enough for believing in the shows and doing this for 10 years. It's going to be good for horse racing. Churchill Downs, should mention them. I mean, they are part of America's Day at the Races. They're, exclusive partner with us as well on Fox. And, we've seen a cooperation now from a post-time standpoint where we're not running on top of each other, which has always been an issue in horse racing with straight tracks, but doing what's best. Because if you look at horse racing, it has become a TV sport. And when I say TV, I don't just mean shows on Fox or shows on TVG, but you know, 90%+ of the wagering is coming off of some type of a television signal, whether you're watching on your ADW, you're sitting at an OTB or a sports book, or you're watching on television. It's a TV sport. We are a TV sport. When we tell, Fox does a college basketball game and they've got 5-6 cameras, compare that to a telecast at Saratoga where we have 35 cameras. That's how big Horse Racing is from a TV production standpoint.
Well, and really, you bring up a great point about the 9 years. It really kind of gives you a free hand, Tony, right? To experiment, to try things that might be drawing board, blue sky ideas, innovation. You can really do whatever you want to try to enhance. And if they work, they work. If they don't, you move on.
Exactly, and Fox has always been an innovator, and they've encouraged us to try new things, and that's something that we're going to do. We're not afraid to invest in technology. You've seen that with the virtual graphics we use, where we do the virtual lanes during an inquiry. I think you're going to see a lot more innovation, and the fact that we have this deal to the end of 2030 means that we can invest in technology, we can invest in new equipment, because we don't have to worry about the show going away in a year or 2 years. We know there's a long-term commitment from our network partner, and that gives us the ability to kind of roll the dice and take some chances and do some things with a long-term goals in mind.
Before I let you go, because I know you're tight. Well, it's 11. I shouldn't even ask you this. Maybe I'll just ask it, and you can ruminate. For you, Tony, given your intimate and well established connection to the modern presentation of racing on TV, going back to the TVG origin. What does this mean to you personally?
You know, for me personally, it means a lot, and I appreciate the question, Steve. It means a lot to me for, multiple reasons. Obviously, there's a sense of pride you always want. You're in the game to win. When I say you're in the game, I mean, we're all competitive. We all want to do well. You want your show to be the best show that's out there and where people go to. So we're all playing the game to win, and you want to do well, but as someone who literally, I've dedicated my whole career to horse racing. I left for a while to go work for the NFL, came back to horse racing. I love the sport, and I truly, truly believe that the sport can benefit from television. And in addition to that, I love the team that we have at NYRA. And that, the commitment, what you're hearing me say, I hear from all the employees there, whether it's the graphics operator, it's a producer, it's talent, they all want to win. They all want to have the best shows. And just knowing that this entire team that came in and day out during the pandemic in New York, which was, let's be honest, the one of the toughest places to be during the pandemic, and to see the commitment to these people, make the shows as good as possible, and know that there's this job security in an industry sports television where there isn't a lot of job security, knowing that the hard work has been rewarded and been recognized, to me, that's the biggest accomplishment in this. And so, I know that this is good for NYRA. It's good for our employees, and it's great for the sport. And that's, I think, what I'm the most proud of. And, again, I can't thank Fox enough and Mike Mulvihill for their commitment and what they've done. And I think that, and the viewers who, tune in and have always, the thing about horse reviewers is great is that they're not afraid to tell you if you do something wrong. And that's good because it really keeps us on our toes and makes sure that we're not cutting any corners in our production. So I can't just say enough about how excited I am about this deal.
The New York Racing Association, Fox Sports, Fox Bets, and NYRA Bets, and Tony Alivato, congratulations and continued success.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Tony Alivato, and really a real achievement and a confirmation of the work that has gone into this production, and a reward for again, not it's not just, oh, you know, it's great for Naira. No, it's much bigger than that. It's good for, you know, what was it? What's good for General Motors? What's good for Naira is good for racing overall. I'm looking forward. We haven't talked to Mike Mulvihill in a couple of years, and I'd love to hear some of Mike's perspective on what this means to Fox and what some of the some of the conceptual elements, because there's a lot of moving parts here. I think that it's not simply racing X amount of hours presented, filling up the airwaves. There's bigger ideas that they're going to be woven in. Let's take a break, our last of the morning, I think, and we'll come back. We've got Papo Morales. I want to do a little form to win with Papo, see how his weekend was before Friday. We'll handicap a couple of things. Chris Griffin is going to join us, and Seth Merrow. So we got three-headed hour here, about 20 minutes each, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports.